four of these 18 descriptions is selfishness. I mean, and that's, you know, if we don't make heaven, it's because we were selfish, we focused on ourselves, and we didn't care about anybody else. And to the point, as you mentioned, even a mother aborting her child. I mean, you think we can get any lower than that? I mean, it's just, and as you brought up, we have to, it could be very depressing if you, I mean, you can't help but hear about it, see about it, read about it.
Right.
But we got to check ourselves, because sure, we could probably all look up there and find something maybe we're struggling with.
Well, it goes the other way, too. How about children treating their parents? How many people today don't want to be bothered with their older or infirm parents? They want to just stick them in a rest home, and they don't have any natural affection. They don't. What did Paul say about that? Children should be storing up for their parents and requiting them for all that they did when they were younger. So we live in a world where people don't respect those they bear or those that bore them. And again, is it kind of perilous out there when you look at the way this is going? Then we have unforgiving. this is somebody that if you cross them, you'll never fix it. You can never fix it. You can apologize. You can bend over backwards. You can anything possible. And when you're all done, they're not going to let it go. And we live in a world where, do we need to accept each other's apologies? Are we going to make mistakes and say things we didn't mean or say things we shouldn't have said? And if you've got someone who will never forgive that, who will never let that go, who will never be appeased, if we have that in the church, what kind of church are we going to have? If we have that in a school, if we have that on the workplace, it just creates a terrible environment. Slanderers. What's a slanderer? Speak evil about people is part of being a slanderer, but what's the main thing about a slanderer?
It's
yeah, it's not true. They're just making things up. And we seem to have a lot of this in the political realm today. We seem to have a lot of this in the workplace. People that just want to bring people down, and they don't have any care or concern about the truth. Most of us will stop at the point of truth. In other words, if it's a lie, we can't go any further. Most of us can think about enough bad things to say about each other that are true, right? We don't really need to go into the untrue because we get to know each other. But some people will go beyond that. They will slander. They will say things. And, of course, who's the consummate slanderer?
Satan.
And that's what the name slanderer means, diabolos, from which we get the word devil. And so it's a slanderer, somebody who says things that are not true. without self-control. What does that mean? If you make somebody mad, generally speaking, are you still safe? I mean, most people have self-control, right? But with this road rage epidemic that we have now, what about this self-control when you're angry? Can you expect people to be self-controlled when they're angry? No. And it just, when a person's under their lust, they are going to do whatever they want to do. There's a proverb that says, whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. So these are people, again, part of this brutality that we see, part of the perilous times as we go through and look at them. But what about brutal? It's a word that means not tame, savage, or fierce, vicious. So you talk about a serpent, a poisonous serpent. Is that brutal? They're fierce. You need to be careful around them. What about people? Are there people out there that are fierce? That's a problem. You go into a grocery store and you don't know who they are, right? I mean, you don't know the next person that you may get irritated at and say something rude to. If they're fierce, you're going to die. And it's happening more and more, where somebody just loses a little bit of control, and they say something they shouldn't say, and the next thing they know, they've crossed somebody who's brutal. And because of that brutality, and again, you read about it every day in the newspapers. All right, despisers of what is good. Why are they trying to take crosses out of the culture? Okay, and of course, in a sense, do we care about crosses? I mean, we don't really think, but it's the concept. They don't like things that are good. They're going to break them down. They're going to take people to court. They're going to try to destroy things that have been acceptable. I mean, we're seeing it all over the country right now. People who are going to take you to court, atheists that are going to take somebody to court to get something removed. What's wrong with having the Ten Commandments in a courthouse? Anything wrong with that? But what are people trying to do today? They just want to strip everything good. They want to strip marriage of its sanctity and say anybody can marry. And so it's just a difficult time where people just don't, not only do they not accept goodness, but they hate it. And they want to destroy it. They want to strip it from the culture, and they want to make those people who are trying to be good, they want to make them the enemy. Carl, is there your hand come up?
Yeah, we have a large organization in this country that their main purpose and all they do is protect the criminal in court.
Right.
It's called the ACLU.
Yeah. For a time, they were doing good things. And that's the problem. All these things start out, and they start out good, and then the wrong people get a hold of them, and they turn it into something. But the ACLU used to be synonymous with liberty and taking the cause of the underdog, but now, you're right, it's been co-opted by people who just hate what's good, and whenever they get an opportunity to rip out from the country something they don't agree with, they'll buy it up. Brian?
Yeah, and at an individual level, you know, we've heard when we were younger somebody calling somebody else goody two-shoes. And, you know, sometimes it's almost like at a psychological level, people can't handle if somebody's doing what's right. There's an envy there. They see a deficiency in themselves. So they don't like to see somebody who's doing what's right because it's almost an indictment of themselves. So the Bible talks about the light exposing the darkness and exposing evil deeds. I think psychologically, some people despise good because they know they're not good.
Yeah, and that's what Jesus said. They hate the light because their works are evil. They don't want to come to the light, and they hate the people who are practicing that. Charles?
Yeah, also along the same line, you know, it could just only take one person that can change a lot. You take the woman that took the leadership in taking prayer, you know, out of the school systems and things like that, you know. Just one person, if their idea is so corrupt about something and because of something personal that perhaps maybe that happened to them, and it's okay, nobody should pray.
Right.
You know, that right there affected a lot of people. Look at how things are now, you know. And just one person and one idea, you know, can change a lot of things in a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're seeing it right now. I mean, sometimes it starts out as something that's legitimate, but what's happening now with this football and not standing for the national anthem? I mean, is that despising what is good? Is patriotism a good thing? Yeah, it's the glue that holds a country together. And so, I'm sorry?
It depends on what the country stands for.
Well, you know, we have a few problems in this country, but I think if you study history, we're probably the best country that there's ever been. Would anybody want to disagree with that? You think we're worse than Rome? Are we worse than Greece? Are we worse than... Every country has its problems, but you don't attack the country for the problems of a few. And so I think that, yeah, I mean, if we get to the point where if I don't agree with you because of this principle, I'm not going to be patriotic anymore. If I don't agree with the country because they don't agree with abortion, I'm not going to be patriotic. Where's the country going to go then? A house divided itself against itself, you can't stand.
And that's what's happening
today. And that is what's happening today.
Yes.
And people are allowing their own causes, and as I say, they can be good causes or bad causes. I mean, can we get up and scream and holler about some of the things our country's doing to us right now? But we're not going to do that, because God said we can't. We have to respect the ruling authority regardless of what they do. So, at any rate, it becomes a perilous time when people are so selfish that they put their own needs above the needs of of God's needs and the needs of the culture. What did God say about? Well, never mind. Let's move on to traitors. What's a traitor? We have the one person in the scriptures this term is used for. Anybody guess who it is?
Judas.
And that's the basic concept of a traitor. A traitor is somebody who pretends to be your friend, who gets involved in you in a relationship and creates trust, creates a sense of camaraderie, and then they use that for their own ends. And you can see this, it affects the country. Generally, when we think of traitors, we think of the country. Are there any husbands who are traitors to their wives? Yeah, there are. There's traitors in every realm. Are there brethren who are traitors to the Lord's cause? And they create problems in the church, and there are traitors in the culture, in the country. There are traitors in business. You give somebody all their secrets, and then what do? They go sell them to the highest bidder. And again, these are people who make the world an unsafe place. They make the world an uncomfortable place. Headstrong. We have any of that in the schools today? In the marketplace today? Just seems like any time there's a rule, somebody's going to try to break it. Somebody's going to try to destroy it. I mean, we went through a cultural problem back in the 60s where we had a headstrong generation that decided that what do we think about authority? Authority is something to be broken. It's something to be destroyed. So the term actually means impetuous and reckless behavior. The only other use of it in the scriptures is at the riot at Ephesus, where the man says, "Let's don't do anything reckless because we're in danger from Rome, because we don't have a good reason for this, what we did. So be careful what you're about to do." So, but if you pass that line, then that's where you get into this. Those who desire to be rich, they end up piercing themselves with many sorrows and difficulties. We remember Balaam. Balaam, Peter called it madness. He got so caught up in his lusts that he self-destructed. And this is just something that we're going to see. Okay, haughty. Like I say, I'm trying to make vocabulary is never, "Oh, this is such an exciting, interesting class." It's, you know, when you're going through word studies, it can get a little bit, little tedious. However, do we need to know what these things are? Yeah, because we may be, you know, it may be us. We may be a part of this. Evil companionship corrupts good morals. And these perilous people, there are school teachers, there are friends, there are preachers, they are people who are involved in politics and in the culture. And some of them are our friends, right? Some of them we tend to justify, or we tend to, well, you know, if my son's brutal, then what do I start doing if I'm foolish? Try to justify him and get him out of trouble. When really, what should happen if somebody's brutal? You should pay the price. They got to learn. All right, haughty. It literally means to be full of smoke. That's what the word means, to be full of smoke. And then it goes on to be puffed up with haughtiness. And then one of the translations is to be crazy, to be demented, to be so arrogant as to be demented. We have anybody like that? Was Napoleon like that? Napoleon Bonaparte, was he so haughty that he was demented? I mean, he conquered the world, but he created a lot of misery for a lot of people. Rob?
Well, and one, thinking more highly of themselves than they really are, and then would be an element of that. And then haughty would be, you know, that's definitely an outward sign. Somebody will see that kind of attitude in us.
Well, yeah. Yep. Well, and again, there are some people, they're just not going to be held back by conventions of decency. Most of us, is peer pressure powerful for most of us? But if you're haughty, what's peer pressure? It doesn't mean anything. Who are they? What do I care about them? A car?
We used to call it stuck up. But that's one that thinks more of himself than he really is. A bully.
Right.
Along those lines.
Yep. And, of course, when this goes up against God, what do we get? A haughty man. Remember Pharaoh? Was he pretty haughty? How'd that work out? So these people are, and Dathan and Abiram would be the same. When God told Moses to tell the people, get away from those tents, would you run away? If you were Dathan and Abiram, would you just stand there looking at all the people running away from you and say, nothing's going to happen? That's haughtiness. Lovers of pleasure. We don't have any of that today, right? Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. So, Paul put it this way, if the dead do not rise, let us eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Do you have your hand up?
Yeah, I was just going to say, that seems like the core of all the others. Lovers of pleasure of themselves rather than lovers of God.
That
just seems like the core.
Well, a lot of them would kind of bubble out into the rest of them. As you look through the list, you can see that, a boaster is also going to be haughty. So a lot of those, they do that. But yeah, some of them cover the whole gamut. They cover everything. So a lover of pleasure, it originally came from the taste buds, the word hedone, which is the lover of pleasure. It means sweet, pleasant, delightful. And then it gradually moved away from taste to move into that which causes pleasure to any sense. By the time this is written, it had moved into the sensual pleasures, giving oneself over to sensual pleasures. We have it today in our culture. If it feels good,
do it.
Do it. And you only go around once in life, so grab all you can. And then Paul says we can't bring anything in and we can't take anything out. So that's the two senses.
The doctrine of situation ethics.
Okay, situation ethics. Whatever the situation is will determine how I make my decision. And if the consequences of doing what's right are too high, then I'll do something else, because what's in it for me often is more important to people than what other people might need. And who is a lover of God, though? What do we call a lover of God?
Those who are obedient to him.
Okay, those who are obedient to him.
Those who buffet their body, like Paul.
All right, they buffet their body. But if you think about it, and we're going to be dealing with this a little bit in our lesson this morning, but in Psalms 103, who heals all your diseases, who gives you everything you need, who forgives you of all your sins? In other words, when you boil down everything God has done for us, is it easy to love him? And once we start loving him, then we're ready to sacrifice for him. But it has to start on a different level. We have to learn that God gives us pleasure, he gives us joy, he gives us happiness. Everything, every enjoyable thing in our life, where did it come from? God. Every good gift and every perfect giving has come from God. And when we look at God as the one who is keeping us back from doing the things we enjoy, then then we're going to be a lover of pleasure. But if we look at God as the one who has given us everything that allows us to have all of these enjoyments, then we can be prepared to rein them in and enjoy them in the context of what he wants us to do. And that's where love, and you see there's a lot of terms up there that have to do with being unloving and uncaring and unconcerned about the needs of others. But generally speaking, when we recognize that someone has done a lot of nice things for us, then we're ready to make these changes for them. And this, of course, is what God would like to see. So The grace of God has appeared, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts. So God's grace, we love him for his grace? Yeah. Well, because of that grace, we have to deny ourselves. Okay, so we've pretty well gone through the words. As I say, we could spend a lot more time on them, but I think we've got a basic concept now. Now we can move to what I found to be so interesting. Virgil?
We were going through these. Excuse me. I couldn't help but thinking that most of us in this audience here today are old enough, and we know we've been through life long enough to understand these things and how they began and what the end result of it is. When we started here, not too many years ago, being very open, and we hang our hat, I say we, our society, on freedom of speech. And we ought to be thankful we live in a country where we can say some things without having our head cut off. But there's a time and a place for these things to take place. And those of us that are older understand that. And we should be wise enough, especially when we're around younger, impressionable people, young people. One of the things that I've noticed in most of the protests that we see today, and it's from the protests on the streets all the way down to the National Football League through there, a lot of older people, gray-haired people, there with their fists raised. What kind of a message is that sending to a young person that has no earthly idea even what is being said or what they're protesting? And that's one of the things that they found out in a lot of this stuff. People that are out there beating it up and down the streets and all this, they have no idea what's going on.
Right.
It's just because somebody else is doing that. Now, it is not fashionable today for an older person to stand up and take and give an account of himself and how we should, as a nation, to take and honor our government for one thing. To do anything else is fostering nothing but problems. There's things that go on, like you already said, that I don't like, you don't like, but we still have an obligation to honor the king, whether we like it or not, as Christians. And we've been around long enough that we ought to recognize that and be an example to younger people and take and try to help them and help us and help our nation. But we see just the opposite taking place. And especially it dismays me to see older people that will be very antagonistic towards being control of our government. If we don't do that, we have anarchy. And if we see our nation spinning towards that right now, and that really ought to concern us. Anyway, that's...
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, you look back at those periods of time where people could go to sleep with their door unlocked, and people could feel comfortable and safe walking home in the dark. They didn't have this sense. Now we live in a jungle. And a lot of these things are like vicious animals. And you just don't know what the next person that you meet, what they're going to be like, what they're going to do. And so it's peril. That's what the word perilous means. It means that things are dangerous. And, of course, we're talking in the physical realm, but what about these things in the spiritual realm, which is where we're going to go in just a minute? When we have these things going on in the material realm, they're also going to be going on in the spiritual realm. Did I see Rob? Yeah.
Well, and I think I was thinking about that as well, that, you know, we might be able to see all this in the world, but if we've ever seen a Christian that spirals in, so to speak, how does a Christian go from one that's faithful, doing what's right, and then they've just completely gave it up? Sometimes you can look back in their life and see these kind of things where they build on each other. You know, it starts out with selfishness and then lovers of themselves, lovers of money. And these things contribute to their destruction. And you could even talk to them after it happens, and they look back and say, yeah, these are just things that built one upon another. So if somebody looks at this list and says, well, that's probably not a big thing. No, it is, because each one of those is a separate item, but it can build on itself. And people that have just totally given it up, you know, they may have every one of those traits.
Right.
Every one of them.
Well, and there was a time when you look at that list, would we say these are the higher echelon of society or the lower echelon? Are these the good people or the criminals? Are these the people that we should look to with respect, or are these the people that we should condemn and tell our children, you don't want to be like that? Carl?
Yeah. I'm one of those, and as Virgil was talking about, that grew up in a time when we were teenagers, nobody locked their doors. And a lot of these things in this list, you didn't have to be a Christian to live by those. These were standards for just moral living. There was no boasters. People didn't act proud. They were obedient to parents. A lot of these things that Christians, new converts, are required to add to their faith now, those were normal things for non-Christians.
Right.
I remember when people wouldn't lie to you. There was no stores open on Sunday. Not because everybody was Christian, because people respected that day.
Right.
And that's over time we've seen a lot of changes in our society.
Yeah. And that's a good point, and that I think that's where I want to go next. And that is, there was a time when you looked at these things, these were things to condemn, right? These were things to look down on. These were things that we saw as a negative. But Paul says the times will become so perilous that these people will have a form of godliness. In other words, these will be the people in the churches. These will be the people that other people are looking up to. And are we seeing some of that today? In other words, are there denominations out there that will cater to selfish people, cater to lovers of money? Caters to people who are proud and they're just no standards. And so you can be a member of the Lord's church, you can be a member of a church, and still have these characteristics, and you're not going to be preached against, you're not going to be looked down upon. This is going to become the norm. And are we pretty well there? Now, there's some things, you've probably heard the expression, that you define deviancy down. In other words, for example, in the 50s, what was a vice squad? What did the vice squads go after in the 50s and 60s? Okay, they went after homosexuality, drugs, what else?
Gambling.
Adultery. Prostitution, adultery. Now, are these vices anymore? Our country, I mean, here we are in, it used to be the vice squad's job to bust people who sold marijuana and used marijuana. What about here in Colorado today? See, now it's legal. That's not a vice. Homosexuality was a punishable offense. If you got caught doing it, you'd be put in jail. Well, what about today? See, defining deviancy down. In other words, these are normal behaviors now. It's normal to be a homosexual. It's normal to use drugs. It's normal. Did you see last week, California has accepted the some people have wanted to take it to court that prostitution should be legalized, and what the court say? Well, take a look at that. Would you ever think that would have happened? Well, take a look at that, and guess what's going to happen? If not now, pretty soon. It's going to become legal. And so prostitutes, homosexuals, adulterers, drug users, they're normal people now in a lot of these cultures, in a lot of this time. And so when these kind of people become the norm, become the godly people in a society, is that a pretty perilous culture? And are we heading in that direction?
Yes.
I mean, you've got churches today, like the Episcopalian Church, their high priest, their chief bishop is what?
Lesbian.
He's a homosexual.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a she. I can't even remember if it's a woman or a man, but they're in a homosexual relationship, an active, practicing homosexual relationship. And that's normal. The church says that's fine. But Virgil had hit up.
Yeah, not too many years ago. Take and try to bring some of this home to us that a lot of us can remember. Adultery was a crime in every state in the Union. And it finally started tumbling. And the state of New York was the last one to give it up. Now, adultery is not in every state that I know of, anyway. The only place that I know of that it is still unlawful is in the military.
Right.
And that's about it. And it's not even thought of as being immoral anymore. It's just a part of the life and the way of our society.
Right. And so we look at that list and we say ungodly, unrighteous, immoral, sinful people. But these people, in this time of peril, these people are going to enter the mainstream and they're going to be godly. They're going to be the people. I mean, do we have preachers who are some of these things in the denominations? Do we have people who can practice these things? We care more about the criminal than we do the victim sometimes. You ever notice that? That when somebody's arrested, well, it was a broken home and they just had so many horrible things going up. And they're really pretty normal considering what they've been through. And you're looking at that and you're going, where's this going to end?
Yeah.
In other words, everything's normal now. And as I say, we've defined deviancy. We've defined ungodliness and corruption to a point where there ain't any. I use that term, you know, ain't, but there just isn't any anymore. And so that's what Paul's emphasizing here, is that these people are going to have a form of godliness. Now, the word form has been variously interpreted. It's kind of a tough word. Let me read you the only other place it's used in the scriptures, and that's in Romans chapter 2, where Paul is talking about the Jew. He says, if you bear the name of a Jew, well, let's go over there and look at it. It's in Romans chapter 2, starting about verse 20. Because this is a perfect parallel. And what the Jews did is exactly what Paul's talking about, the perilous times when it's going to happen in the church as well. So we start in Romans chapter 2, where Paul is talking to the Jewish people. Verse 17, indeed you are called a Jew and rest on the law and make your boast in God and know his will and approve the things that are excellent. Being instructed out of the law, are confident that you yourself are a guide to the blind, a light to those who are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, having the form of knowledge and truth in the law. So these Jews really thought that they were great people. And yet, as Peter or as Stephen said it to them, you stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart, you always resist the Holy Spirit, and you have murdered the Holy One. Now, this is the upstanding nation we call Israel. And even though they had the law, were they some of these things? Were they proud? Were they blasphemers? Were they brutal? Were they, as you look at what they did to Jesus, can you see almost all of these? And yet, they have used the law to make that normal. And one of the things Jesus was just constantly fighting against was the ungodliness of these people who had made these things normal. Like he told the Pharisees, you compass land and sea to make a disciple, and once you've got him,
twice the son of hell.
Yeah, you make him twice the son of hell he was before you found him. And this is why. And this is what we're seeing in a lot of the denominations today. I mean, when you accept the once saved, always saved mantra, and there's no consequences for anything that you do, where are we going to go with that? And that's where people are going. So the Jews held to a form of godliness, but they were the furthest thing from that. And so these people are going to be, these are the people Jude was talking about that creep in secretly. These are the people who they're going to use, well, how did Paul put it in 1 Timothy 6, they suppose that godliness is a means of gain. Now, what exactly does that mean? They suppose that godliness is a means of gain. Talking about teachers. George, you hand your hand up before my question, so you must, are you answering my question or you got something else to say?
Something else.
Okay, I knew it. Go ahead. Then we'll come back to my question.
We need to understand in this case that, as you referred back to Romans 2, that all of this kind of stuff was going on when Paul wrote this to Timothy, just like it is today here, or worse. But he's talking about what happens religiously in here, really, as he says in verse 5, because that's where we have our problems coming from, as you're getting to, about once saved, always saved, everything else, that you can't even say anything against somebody because you're taking away their freedoms or whatever, or you're being hateful or whatever the case people want to accuse you of. But verse 5 says, turn from such, turn away. And if we turn away from these things, we're going to be condemning them.
Right. That's why they hate us, right?
Yeah.
Carl, I saw your hand go out on me.
Yeah, considering godliness is a great gain, I remember a person in the congregation, a Christian, that he changed his membership to a larger congregation, and we asked him why he did that. He says, "Well, I have a janitorial business, and there's more customers over there."
Sure.
Godliness for gain. Same thing.
Yeah, and that's the key. Let's see if I got it here. We already looked at that. Okay, I guess I did. I thought I had it in here. Yeah, there we go. Perilous times when in the church those who suppose that godliness is a means of gain, there will be false teachers among you. The way of truth will be blasphemed, and they will exploit you with deceptive words. The peril is not, you know, normally when we look at that, I don't have it up there anymore, but when you look at those characteristics, you think about how dangerous the world is. But what's Paul saying? This is how dangerous the church can be. And we're moving in that direction. The denominations are there, and the Lord's church, and you see it on the leftward fringe, that they're already there. And we're all struggling against this terrible, evil companionship that is corrupting. And we just have to realize that this is a peril that we all face. Ken, did you have anything?
Oh, I was just going to point out that in a conversation with some people, this one person said, well, you know, being ordained and an ordained preacher means that you just have a license to steal. That was their attitude.
Right. And there's a lot of that. You know, it's one of those things when people ask you what you do for a living. You know, I'm a preacher. Well, you're a used car salesman is what some people are hearing. You're a crook is what some people are hearing. And that's where we're at. It didn't used to be like that, but that's where we're at. Charles?
Yeah, also, I just wanted to read something from Isaiah chapter 5, verse 20.
Yeah, I had it in my notes. Go ahead. Yeah, you go ahead and read it.
Okay, for to them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light, and light for darkness, that benefits seekers for evil good. You know, and that's the way things are, but it was also prophesied a long time ago that these things would happen, and it is there now.
Yeah. And it'll cycle. It'll go away and it'll come back. I mean, this, what Ecclesiastes say? That which has been, what shall be, and that which has been done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, this is, as George pointed out, this stuff was going on. It was alive and well in Paul's day, and Paul's just saying Christianity's not going to change that. Can't change the essential nature of people. If they want to do sinful things, they're going to do it. All right, we'll stop there. We'll pick up. I want to talk a little bit about denying its power next week, but we'll be able to, I think, close out this section pretty quickly. All right.